Appreciate very much that prayer. And I have thoroughly enjoyed being with you all this weekend. I want to say again thank you to the leadership of this congregation for the invitation, for all the hard work that went into planning this and to advertising it and to encouraging friends and neighbors and others to be here. I'm going to kind of begin this morning on a little lighter note than how we have begun most of the other lectures in this series by telling you a story about a lawyer and a doctor and a preacher who went hunting one day. I don't know how many hunters that we have here, but down in Alabama and Mississippi, in that area where I live, we have a lot of hunters. Well, these men were going out the last day of deer season, and they were looking for that buck that they had heard about in the area. In fact, they had, you know, these days, hunters, they're pretty sophisticated a lot of times. They set up these digital cameras in various places and in the wooded area, and they will have pictures taken of various animals as they come across the camera, even without even being there. They have different sensors on these cameras, and they had seen pictures of a buck with an unbelievably huge rack. The buck weighed who knows how many pounds, but it looked like about a 12-point buck that had a spread on its rack of nearly 2 or 3 feet, just a humongous deer. And they had been looking for this deer all deer season. And here was the last day, and they all three got in their deer stands, and they looked out upon a meadow, and they saw various doe come by and a couple of smaller buck, but they were waiting for the big daddy buck, and then all of a sudden it came out into the meadow that they were looking over, and they fired upon the buck, and it dropped right where it was standing. They all three, that is the lawyer and the doctor and the preacher, rushed out of their tree stands. The lawyer immediately got on his cell phone, began to call his wife and friends, and then immediately was the first one to the duck, to the buck, not the duck, and began to take pictures of the animal and sending texts about the buck that he had just shot and killed. And about that time, the doctor and the preacher came up and said, "Well, wait a second, I shot that deer." And the doctor said, "I shot that deer." The preacher said, "I shot that deer." The lawyer said, "No, I shot the deer. I'll make a good case for me shooting this deer." And the doctor said, "Well, wait just a minute. Let me examine the deer." So the doctor began to examine the deer. He examined the head of it and the tail of it and all in between. And he paused for just a moment and looked up at the lawyer and looked up at the preacher and said, "This is the preacher's deer." And the lawyer said, "How do you know it's the preacher's deer?" He said, "Well, there was a clean shot here. It's the preacher's deer." He said, "What do you mean there was a clean shot?" He said, "Well, the bullet went in one ear and out the other. So it's got to be the preacher's deer." Now, I appreciate how the things that we have said this weekend have hopefully, not for all of you, just gone in one ear and out the other. I know sometimes when you sit through hours of lectures that can happen. Hey, I've sat through hours of lectures in my lifetime, especially going back to college days, and I remember how difficult it can be. But you have honored me very much with your presence here and with very kind attention. Our young people have, wow, I'm so amazed at how even some of our very young people have paid such good attention to the things that we have presented. As we begin this Bible class hour, let me also make this statement, that I recognize that a lot of what we have dealt with thus far, and even what we will deal with in this class period, that we have not opened up God's Word a lot and looked at various passages. We will do that, Lord willing, in the worship hour this morning and in the hour of worship that we will have tonight when I speak. But we have dealt a lot with evolution, with problems with the theory of evolution, with the poster children of evolution. So we have dealt a lot with the world and looking at the facts that we can know from the world and from God's creation. And I think it is very appropriate to look at our Creator's creation and to talk about His creation and to also point out how we can know some things about the Creator from His creation. Paul did say in Romans chapter 1, since the creation of the world, His, God's, invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. That's us, I believe. That's not talking about, you know, animals don't understand the nature of God. Angels, that's not the context of Romans chapter 1, it's people. Being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that we, people, are without excuse for not believing in God. And so I have attempted to this weekend to give a lot of evidences against the general theory of evolution, for the creation theory or model or whatever you want to call it. Unbelievers would call it just a theory, if that. But a lot of evidence is for creation and for the Creator. And I believe that as Christians, we have a responsibility to do our best to declare God's glory, to give Him the credit, and to describe His wonders to a world who may have questions about that God and may have questions about His creation. I'm going to pick up really this morning kind of where we left off last night, and we're going to talk about some about the age of the earth, and we will really carry over into the next hour, the worship period, talking about the Bible and the age of the earth a little more. But we're going to talk about dinosaurs and the age of the earth, and this morning in the Bible class period, beginning with dinosaurs and going on into some other things. One of the questions that we have been asked a lot, that is asked regularly, and is a very good question. You remember last night we ended with the question of, well, how do you know that all of these carvings and drawings of dinosaurs and dinosaur-like creatures, how do you know the ancients didn't just see bones of dinosaurs and draw those? Well, we answered that last night at the conclusion of the three lectures that we had yesterday. Well, this is another one of those questions that oftentimes is asked, and this will catapult us into a discussion in just a little bit more later about the age of the earth. But why haven't dinosaur and human fossils been found together? I would readily admit that would be nice if they were found together at various places around the world, and it could be that there are instances or occasions where this has happened and I'm just unaware of them. I know there are some things that people have brought forth as possible evidence, and some people have rejected it, and some people say that there are some problems with those. I know that there were some human fossils actually found in Moab, Utah several years ago in a layer of rock where you would find dinosaur bones and other sorts of bones that supposedly are from creatures that lived millions and millions of years ago. Evolutionists, their explanation to this was, well, there were some humans who fell down a shaft in the ground and died, and that's why their bones were still there. Well, I had a hard time believing that, but I will say that there were a few things about the discovery that had me questioning the matter, so I normally don't use that as proof of humans and dinosaurs living together, though it may very well be proof. I will say, would it be nice if we could go out and we could find 100 instances where humans and dinosaur bones were buried together? Sure, that would be nice. But the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of animals that have lived in the past that are no longer living today that we know humans live with that we don't find their fossils together. I don't know of any dodo bird bones that have been found with human bones. I don't know any saber-toothed tiger bones that have been found or fossils that have been found with human fossils or woolly mammoth fossils or any number of fossils. So just because we don't find human and dinosaur bones together doesn't mean that they did not live together. It simply means they did not what? They didn't die together. Well, number one, let me make a few points here. Fossils, generally speaking, are rare. Relatively speaking, now I understand that you may have fossils at your house. I have some fossils in my office. Relatively speaking, meaning in comparison to every living organism that has ever lived, fossils, in a sense, are rare. I mean, consider how many buffalo and bison there were that roamed the central plains of what is now the United States of America hundreds and hundreds of years ago. From what we understand, there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these animals. But where are they today? Well, many of them, most of them, most of that population has been depleted. Many of them were killed back 100 and 150 or so years ago. My understanding is when they had the trains going from the East Coast to the West Coast and they were first beginning to build those railroad tracks, that they would bring people out here and they would just have shooting sprees from the trains and they would shoot a lot of the buffalo. Well, there are a lot of different reasons why the buffalo are no longer at least not in the numbers that they used to be in the central plains of America. But my point is this. If thousands or hundreds of thousands or perhaps even millions of bison, buffalo died, where are all of their fossils? Well, the point is there are very few of these animals that fossilize. Because most animals, most humans, when we die, we don't fossilize. In describing a situation where a large population of animals died, notice what this evolutionary scientist, James Powell, wrote about fossilization and fossils in general. He said, in the winter after the great Yellowstone fires of 1988, thousands of elk perished from the extreme cold coupled with lack of food. Late the following spring, their carcasses were strewn everywhere. Yet, only a few years later, bones from the great elk kill are scarce. The odds that a single one will be preserved so that it can be found 65 million years from now approach zero. At best, we can expect to find fossil evidence of only a tiny fraction of the animals that once lived. The Earth's normal processes destroy or hide most of the clues. So the first point to make is fossils, generally speaking, really are rare when you consider that most things that have ever lived did not fossilize. Most animals that die, they are eaten by other animals. They disintegrate over a period of time. They are eaten by microorganisms. Fossilization, most people understand, occurs when there is some kind of catastrophe, when there is a quick burial, and then you don't have that kind of breakdown that you would normally have in animals over a period of time when they are exposed to the elements. But you have the outside rocks that eventually take the place of the bones, and the bone minerals then are really replaced by rock minerals, so that you have rock minerals that are now more in the shape of the carcass that was left behind, or the animal that was left behind. You have what are called fossils. Fossils are not bones. Fossils are in the shape of bones, but really that material that's inside the bones have been replaced by the rock. And so most people admit readily that fossilization occurs when there is some kind of great catastrophe. Well, most people who have ever lived, most animals that have ever lived, they didn't die because of this kind of catastrophe. So number one, please recognize that fossilization is rare, at least in a sense. Furthermore, most fossils are not vertebrates, they're invertebrates. Most fossils that we find are not of dinosaurs. They certainly are not of humans. They are of animals that do not have backbones. Number three, I read one statement some time ago that said something like over 95% of all fossils that have been found have been of invertebrates and not vertebrates like dinosaurs and humans. Third, there are not as many dinosaur fossils as people think. Now, can you go to the Dinosaur Museum, Dinosaur National Monument, on the Colorado-Utah border and see hundreds of dinosaur bones jumbled together? You most certainly can. Can you go to Canada? Can you go to Africa? Can you go to Australia? Can you go to Antarctica and find dinosaur fossils? You certainly can. Dinosaur fossils have been found on all seven continents. By the way, do you realize that they have found not only fossils of dinosaurs down in Antarctica, but they have found fossils of all sorts of vegetation down there? Vegetation that does not grow there now, but used to grow there. I was reading an article by an evolutionist a few months back who talked about Antarctica used to be nothing like it is today. It used to have more of a subtropical type climate, they would say, millions of years ago. So isn't it kind of interesting that Antarctica used to have a much more tropical, subtropical type climate? Now it contains 90% of the ice on Earth is in Antarctica, and yet there is a lot of concern about global warming. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be concerned about the activity of the Earth or that Christians should not be good stewards of what we see around us. I do find it interesting that a long time ago, before planes, trains, and automobiles, there was a more subtropical climate down in Antarctica. Now it's covered by 90%. Now it contains 90% of the ice on Earth. And a lot of people are alarmed that maybe some of that ice might melt and the ocean levels might rise. Well, guess what? If it rises, maybe we can just all move down to Antarctica and have a nice little subtropical area down there, get us some real estate that nobody owns, and maybe get some cheap land. I don't know. But anyway, I don't mean to go off on that. I'm saying it's interesting to me that we're all concerned about about the climate maybe getting a little bit hotter or something, when we know that according to evolutionists millions of years ago, according to creationists, it wouldn't certainly have been that long ago, that the Earth was very different in its climate. So there are a lot of questions that people have, whether it be about dinosaur fossils or human fossils. But one point we want to make is, yes, you can find dinosaur fossils even in Antarctica. But generally speaking, again, dinosaur fossils are fairly rare. Consider some statements like by James Lawrence Powell, who talked about dinosaur graveyards or talked about dinosaur bones. And even though dinosaur graveyards have been discovered in various places around the world, most people are unaware of the fact that in spite of the intense, this is a quotation from Dr. James Lawrence Powell, in spite of the intense popular and scientific interest in the dinosaurs and the well-publicized efforts of generations of dinosaur hunters, only about 2,100 articulated dinosaur bones, that is, two or more bones aligned in the same position as in life, have ever been found that currently are on display in museums. Now, I do not know exactly where Dr. Powell, got his information from. And I certainly have not gone to all of the museums to research this. I'm showing you, here is what an evolutionist has to say about how many dinosaur bones have been found, at least how many have been found articulated or lined up like you would see them in real life, but yet only have their bones there that are fossilized. Well, not very many. Most dinosaur fossils that have been found have been in a more jumbled state, which would indicate what? Well, some kind of catastrophic death. In an article that appeared in October of 1990 in an issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and I referred to this yesterday, Dr. Peter Dodson of the University of Pennsylvania said that 45.3% of all dinosaur genera are based on a single fossil specimen. Isn't that interesting? We hear about all sorts of dinosaurs, but here's an evolutionist who said, you know, that 45.3% of all dinosaur genera, that they're named because they found a claw of a dinosaur, or because they found a tooth of a dinosaur, because they found a fossilized vertebra of a dinosaur. 45.3, nearly half of all dinosaur genera that have ever been named have been named from one single solitary fossil. Nearly 75% of all dinosaur genera are represented by five fossil specimens or less. Even some of the most famous dinosaurs are based on a fraction of what they were originally. Consider the 120-foot-long estimated Argentinosaurus found. Where do you think it was found? In Argentina, that's right. Replica housed in the Fernbank Museum of Natural History. I've been there. It's a pretty interesting place to see. That this replica is based on only 10% of Argentinosaurus' remains. That's how much they dug up. So there's a lot of guesswork even among, you know, what the dinosaurs look like and all of their fossils. So third, please understand that dinosaur fossils are not as prevalent as we might like to think. Though, yes, do people find them around the world? They most certainly do. But did you realize that nearly 75% of all dinosaurs, the genres, their names, they have been given based upon five fossil specimens or less? And then fourth, human fossils are extremely, extremely rare. And you don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to show you some quotations from evolutionists and what they have to say about this very matter. Really, it's a good question to say, well, why haven't we found human and dinosaur bones together? You know, wouldn't that prove that they live together? Well, I would say certainly yes, that would be a proof of them living together. It may be that they've been found and for whatever reason they were not, it was not brought to the attention of the public for a variety of reasons. It may be that they were mislabeled. It may be that evolutionists, that they think, well, certainly no humans could have lived within the time of the dinosaurs, so they're mislabeled something else. I don't know. But what I do know is this, that doesn't prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that humans and dinosaurs did not live together. The question that should be asked really is not, you know, why aren't humans and dinosaur bones found together? The question is, where are all the human fossils? Again, we don't have fossils of grizzly bears and humans together that I know of, or of dodo birds and humans, or of rhinos and humans, or of a lot of other animals and humans. So just because we may not find or may not have found dinosaur bones and human bones together doesn't mean that they didn't live together. All it means is they did not die together. And this point, I think, is a very valid point, that there are very, very, very few human fossil bones that have ever been found. Consider that more than two decades ago, in an article that appeared in The New Scientist, John Reeder wrote this statement. He said, the entire hominid collection, or, you know, those our alleged kind of ape-like ancestors that are about to become humans, all of this collection now today would barely cover a billiard table. Now, admittedly, this statement goes back to 1981, but even since that time, there haven't been very many hominid or human fossils that have been found. He said at this point, paleontologists have been all over the world looking for hominid and human fossils long before 1981, and he said all that we could find could fit easily on a billiard table. 1 year later, Lyle Watson similarly stated, the fossils that decorate our family tree are so scarce that there are still more scientists than specimens. The remarkable fact is that all the physical evidence we have for human evolution, and I contend that there is no legitimate evidence for that, can still be placed with room to spare inside a single coffin. Okay? These are not quotations that I just lifted up out of the air. They have been written by men similar to this one back in 1982 who know much more about the subject matter than most people that I have ever met. In August of 1982, an issue of Natural History, Noel Boaz and Douglas Kramer wrote an article titled Fossils of the Libyan Sahara, in which they admitted what? Well, they admitted that the question that bedevils us is why fossils of hominoids are so exceedingly rare at Sahabi and in the fossil record generally. I'm just showing you some quotations from various evolutionists who have said, you know what? Human fossils are rarely, rarely found. Forget whether they're found with dinosaurs. They're just rarely found for whatever reason. In a conversation in 1996 with James Powell that I quoted from just a few minutes ago, president and director of the Los Angeles County Museum of Natural History, the renowned evolutionary paleontologist Meave Leakey. You've heard of the Leakey family? Well, Meave Leakey gave some insight into her frustrations in search for hominid and human fossils as she described her, quote, nearly futile hunt for human bone in a new field area as 4 years of hard work producing only three nondescript scraps of fossil specimens. This lady spent how long? 4 years, no doubt with a team of people helping her, in a particular area trying to find human or hominid fossils. And she said, during a four-year period, we found three nondescript scraps. And then I think I have one or two more slides just trying to impress upon your minds understanding that this question of, you know, why don't you find humans and dinosaur fossils together, which I admit is a legitimate question, is really not the right question to ask, if I may say that. The right question is, where are all the human fossils? More recently, David Begun concluded an article in Science magazine titled, The Earliest Hominids is Less More, and he admitted this. He said, the level of uncertainty in the available direct evidence at this time renders irreconcilable differences of opinion inevitable. The solution is in the mantra of all paleontologists, we need more fossils. And he's referring to human fossils, or they would call hominid fossils. Although hominid and human fossils are the most sought after fossils in the world. I mean, governments around the world are doling out millions and millions and millions of dollars to try to find who our ancestors were. Scientists readily admit that few human fossils have been found. And I believe those are some good reasons why we don't find human and dinosaur bones together. But you know, there is evidence in the earth, I believe, that has been discovered just recently that are indicators that, you know, these bones and the rock in which those bones are found are not as old as we are told or led to believe. Just a few years ago in Science magazine, in fact, just about every quotation that you're seeing are from pro-atheistic evolutionary type journals. But in Science magazine in 2005, maybe you heard about this story, but they reported that soft tissues are preserved. Now get this. Within hind limb elements of Tyrannosaurus rex, they found fossils of a Tyrannosaurus rex that when they excavated these fossils, my understanding is they actually had to break this Tyrannosaurus rex fossil in order to get it to be transported by a helicopter. And when they broke it and took it back to the lab, what they discovered was some soft tissue. Removal of the mineral phase, reveals transparent, flexible, hollow blood vessels. Some regions of the demineralized bone matrix are highly fibrous and the matrix possesses elasticity and resilience, they reported. The demineralized fragment is flexible and resilient and when stretched returns to its original shape. They found a Tyrannosaurus rex fossil that when they took it back to the laboratory they realized that this thing is inside it, so it had some tissue that is flexible, that is resilient. When they put some little bit of a chemical on it, they were able to see not only blood vessels, but even things that appeared to be blood cells. And here are some of the images that were in Science magazine. Now, I'm not a rocket scientist, but it seems that when you see this kind of thing, it's hard for me to imagine people believing that the rocks in which and the fossils themselves were many millions of years old. Mary Schweitzer, whom I have discussed, I've talked about this matter on the phone with, she said, in writing with our colleagues about this matter, said, "Demineralization of femur and tibia fragments revealed the preservation of fibrous, flexible, and apparently original tissues, as well as apparent cells and blood vessels." Now, the headlines read like this: 70 million year old Tyrannosaurus rex fossil dug out of a hunk of sandstone yielded soft tissue, including blood vessels. This is one of the lead stories from the Associated Press just a couple of years ago. So we have soft dinosaur tissue that they just say is 70 million years old. Paleontologists were stunned to find that the soft tissue of a 70 million year old dinosaur was preserved within a fossil from a Tyrannosaurus rex. Why would they be so shocked by this? Why? Well, because you shouldn't have soft tissue, blood vessels, apparent blood cells in a dinosaur bone that's supposedly, allegedly, 70 million years old. Alan Boyle, in an article he wrote, he's a science editor, or was, back in 2007, I don't know for sure if he still is or not, for MSNBC, reported in 2007 that paleontologists are still stunned not only to find material that looks like dinosaur cartilage, blood vessels, blood cells, and bone cells, but to see the stuff in so many different specimens. Paleontologists are finding this soft tissue not just in one or two samples, but he says in a growing number or many different specimens. He says there are a growing number of tissue samples. It's not just a fluke occurrence. It's something that's more pervasive in the fossil record. And my contention is, if it is, shouldn't this be an indication that these bones are not many, 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 many millions of years old, and the rocks in which these bones are found are not that old, and that something is very wrong with the dating methods that the evolutionists use to date these things? They have excavated a T-Rex and a Hadrosaur from Montana, a Titanosaurus, another kind of dinosaur from Madagascar, and, quote, more samples that fossil hunter Jack Horner is finding in Mongolia as well as Montana. Jack Horner is probably the, hands down, most famous dinosaur fossil hunter in the world. And he is one of those discovering some of these things. Regarding the Hadrosaur specimen found in Montana, Dr. Mary Schweitzer stated, it's the freshest, if you will, dinosaur bone that has ever had this analysis conducted on it. What we're finding is absolutely incredible, amazing preservation. In fact, I would say it is, just as one writer wrote in the Baltimore Sun, miraculous preservation. He said, miraculously preserved soft tissue from a femur of a 68 million year old T-Rex. Miraculously preserved tissue. Well, my comment is, wouldn't it take a miracle to preserve tissue for 70? I mean, these guys seem to think that. It just baffles them. Why in the world do we have soft, flexible, fibrous, resilient dinosaur tissue in a growing number of fossil specimens that are found all over the world if these bones are 70 million years old? One writer was somewhat honest enough to say, well, it must be miraculously preserved. But wait a minute, these men do not believe in miracles. So what's the problem here? I believe the problem is that their entire dating method is off kilter, and that these bones are not 70 million years old. I was talking about this subject a few years ago, and I was in Cobb County, Georgia, when I was discussing it. If I'm not mistaken, the gentleman that I mentioned earlier in this seminar who actually filed the lawsuit against the Cobb County School Board that we discussed yesterday afternoon, when he heard this information, he said, well, you know, what's the big deal about that? He said, things can be preserved for a long time. Look at pickles. And, you know, I just thought, well, wait a second. No, number one, the dinosaur bones they're finding aren't being preserved in pickle juice or whatever pickles are preserved in, vinegar or whatever it is. I mean, these things are encased in rock. They are rock. That's what fossils are. And number two, has he ever seen a 70 million year old pickle? I ain't never seen that before. How do you know what that looks like? How do you know a pickle would still be around 70 million years later? And I know some of you ladies are good at canning things and, you know, having things preserved for a while. And I love those peach preserves and pear preserves. I can eat them up. But I never had a 70 million year old preserved pear. You know, another indication of the problems with evolutionary dating methods and so forth are further seen in some of the stories that people tell about dinosaurs. For example, Dr. George Gaylord Simpson suggested years ago that the only mammals that had evolved during the time of the dinosaurs were small, mostly mouse-sized, and rare. Thomas Hayden wrote a similar statement in the year 2002 in the U.S. News and World Report saying, as mammals, we like to think that we're pretty superior. The sad truth, mammals coexisted with dinosaurs for 150 million years, but were never able to go beyond little rat-like things. You see, mammals supposedly evolved from the reptiles, and the mammals weren't very advanced during the days of the dinosaurs, and so they were all mostly small, rat-like animals, mouse-sized, chipmunk-sized. The conventional theory says that early mammals were timid, chipmunk-sized creatures that scurried the looming shadow of the giant reptiles, a statement by Joseph Berenguia in, I think that was in the early 21st century. Now, again, an interesting find. In 2005, LiveScience.com reported how a fossil of a mammal they said was 20 times larger than what evolutionists believed to be possible were reported to be in the same fossil beds as dinosaurs. Again, they said, well, mammal fossils, they're not found except just the small little rodent-type animals, mouse-sized, chipmunk-sized creatures with the dinosaurs. Well, you know what? Now they're finding some other things. They're finding out that, you know, there are some larger mammals that were living during the time of the dinosaurs. In fact, another mammal discovered in the same region actually had the remains of a 5-inch dinosaur in its stomach. What does that mean? That means that some mammals, at least this one, was large enough and big enough to eat a small dinosaur because the remains, they believe, of Psittacosaurus were in the stomach region of a mammal that was much bigger than a chipmunk and a small mouse. In February of 2006, it was announced that a mammal that looked very much like a beaver was unearthed in China in a layer of rock supposedly 164 million years old. This is 100 million years before most evolutionary scientists believed that mammals could swim or grow larger than a shrew. So what did they find? They found one fossil, and guess what? All of a sudden they went from, well, this thing lived 64 million years ago. No, what we found out is this thing lived 164 million years ago. 100 million years of evolutionary time is, bam, is pretty much gone just by the discovery of a single fossil. The discovery of a furry, beaver-like animal that lived at the same time of dinosaurs overturned more than a century of scientific thinking about Jurassic mammals. The find shows that the ecological role of mammals in the time of the dinosaurs was far greater than previously thought. And all of a sudden they went from thinking, well, this animal lived 64 million years ago, to thinking, well, this animal, I guess, had to have lived 164 million years ago and evolved during the time, they would say, during the time of the dinosaurs and before some of the dinosaurs. We've talked a lot about those poster children of evolution yesterday and are continuing to talk about it in light of the subject of the age of the earth. Do you realize that there are a lot of animals that supposedly live with the dinosaurs that are still living today? You know, for a long time, people said that coelacanths were only known from the fossil record, and that these animals evolved back during the time of the dinosaurs, and they said that they became extinct around the time, if not before the time, the dinosaurs supposedly became extinct. They even felt so sure that coelacanths became extinct during that time that they considered these animals index fossils. That is, whenever they see a coelacanth or saw a coelacanth in a particular layer of rock, they just felt sure that they knew that that particular layer of rock had to be at least 65 or 70 plus million years old. Fossil coelacanths, which were discovered in the early 1830s, had, or mid 1839, had an arrangement of bones and a fleshly portion of their fins that was similar to the limbs of modern land animals. For almost a century, this is a Science News, Evolutionary News Report, almost a century, for almost a century, paleontologists thought early coelacanths were close ancestors of the first vertebrates to walk on land. They believed that these were the animals. They saw these animals in the fossil record, and they believed these were the animals, based upon their pectoral fin structure. These were the animals that crawled up out of the water, that kind of swam up out of the water and developed these little legs, and that they became amphibians. And they just felt sure these creatures became extinct millions of years ago. And they were so sure about that that they labeled these creatures as index fossils as early as the 1830s. Coelacanths were once thought to be the missing link in evolution of fishes to amphibians. 70 million years ago, they supposedly became extinct. Where are their fossils from layers of rock that today are dated as being 10 million or 20 million or 30 million? Well, I know of none. I've never seen a picture or never heard anyone report of a fossil of a coelacanth that lived and died about 10 million years ago, or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. But they say that these fossils go back to 60 or 70 plus million years ago, and we're so sure about that that we're going to label them as index fossils, which means whenever they see this fish, hey, that layer of rock we know is at least 60 or 70 million years old. Yet, a few decades ago, back in the 1930s, I believe it was on December the 24th, if I'm not mistaken, in 1938, guess what they found? Well, living modern-day coelacanths were found swimming and being caught off the shores of Indonesia and Madagascar. And since that time, there have been reports of well over 100 and upwards to 200 coelacanths around the world. People have now even swum with these creatures in the open oceans. Now, this is an indication, I believe, once again, of how faulty the evolutionary dating methods and conclusions can be. At one time, it was said, we know this animal became extinct 70, 65 million years ago. Yet they're still living today. Well, where are all their fossils between 70 million years ago and now? Well, you know, we don't have those. So does that mean they didn't exist during that time? No. It simply means we haven't found their fossils yet, and maybe there are none during that time that's supposedly labeled as being 65 or 70 million years old. And by the way, what does all this matter anyway? I've been asked before, hey, Eric, why do you discuss matters pertaining to the age of the earth? What's the big deal? And I freely admit that discussions about the deity of Christ and the nature of God and those matters are much more weightier, and that we should, I think, spend more time talking about those matters than the age of the earth. However, there are occasions to discuss this matter, and it's not something that we need to avoid. It's not something that we need to be ashamed of. Furthermore, it's a biblical matter. I mean, we believe that God created everything. Yes. Did God tell us He did it in 6 days? Yes. And we'll have more to say about that in the next hour. Did God give us indications of how old the earth is? He most certainly did. How did He do that? Well, He's told us that He created Adam and Eve on day 6 of creation. And we know that there are about 20 generations between Adam and Abraham. About 50 generations from Abraham down to Jesus. We know that Jesus lived 2,000 years ago based upon history, based upon many reasons, many facts. And one of those being we live in the year 2009. All that is based around the life of Jesus, the birth of Jesus. Well, we know from history and from biblical references that Abraham lived about 4,000 years ago, about 2,000 years before Jesus. And so how much time was there between Abraham back to Adam? Well, even evolutionists would say, well, you know, the first humans evolved 3 to 4 million years ago or so. Even they wouldn't say it's billions of years. And so there's not a whole lot of point, and I'll address this a little further in the next hour, to just discuss, well, that, you know what, you can't fit millions or billions of years between Abraham back to Adam. The Bible says there's only 20 generations between the two. So how old is the earth? Well, we don't know exactly how old the earth is. It seems to me it's around 6 to 10,000 years old, not millions or billions of years old. So if the Bible implies this doctrine, we shouldn't be ashamed to address it when people ask us questions about it. I find it interesting that a lot of theistic evolutionists, And a lot of other people don't have a problem telling their ideas about, well, you know, you can fit a lot of evolution. The general theory of evolution can basically be packed in the Bible, they say. And again, we'll discuss that more in the next hour. People don't seem to be bothered with being able to talk about that matter. And yet, we shouldn't be ashamed to discuss what we believe the Bible teaches about the age of the earth. Again, is it a central tenet, a central doctrine of Christianity? No, not at all. But you know what? We shouldn't be ashamed of the fact that Jonah was swallowed by a big whale or a big fish. We shouldn't be ashamed by the fact that the Israelites walked around Jericho 6 times in 6 days and 7 times on the 7th day. We shouldn't be ashamed of the fact that Jesus was in the tomb for 3 days and 3 nights. We shouldn't be ashamed of various facts that the Bible tells us. And I'm not ashamed of what the Bible has to say about the age of the earth. But the more pertinent reason, really the more pressing reason why we deal with matters pertaining to the age of the earth is because of this. Because people say, evolutionists say, if there are indications, if it can be proven that the earth is young, then evolution is false. So why do I discuss this matter? More than I discuss, you know, how old Methuselah lived to be, or how many times the Israelites walked around Jericho, or Jonah being swallowed by a big fish and being in there for 3 days and 3 nights. Why do I discuss it more than those things? Well, because evolutionists admit, if the earth is young, evolution could not be true. Let me show you a statement from a man writing just recently in New Scientist magazine, Michael LePage. He said that one of the main, quote, sorts of findings and experiments that could have falsified evolution, but supposedly has not, is a, quote, young earth. He said in this article, one of the ways that you could prove this, you could disprove evolution, is by showing us the earth is relatively young and not billions of years old. Now, he says it hadn't happened, but why would we deal with the subject? Because I believe it can be proven. Young earth would also be a problem for evolution, he went on to say, since evolution by natural selection requires vast stretches of time, deep time, as Darwin realized. Interestingly, you know, in the days of Darwin, they estimated, well, the earth was so many, just millions of years old. And then they said, well, it's many more, you know, as time goes on, well, it's many more years than that, many millions of more years older than that, and then it's millions of years older than that. And now we've gone from thinking the earth was a few million years old to now people are saying it's 4 billion years old. Well, why? Why does it continue, the time continue to stretch? Because evolution, they say, can only happen if they have long, long, vast amounts of time. And third, the reason this subject is so important to many Christians is because it represents one of the ways, and this is kind of tied into point two, it represents one of the ways to disprove evolution. One thing that both creationists and evolutionists agree on is this: if the earth is not really billions of years old, evolutionists would say, then evolution is not true. But someone has said, well, you know, Eric, in the last 5 minutes or so we have here, let me just address a couple of the evolutionary dating methods, mainly radiocarbon and radiometric dating. People have said, Eric, and I've heard this time again, you know, radiocarbon dating, they've proved the earth is really old. What is radiocarbon dating? Don't have a lot of time to get into it. But cosmic rays change nitrogen-14 into carbon-14. Carbon-14, then, in our atmosphere, and again, this is as about a simple, simplified explanation and graphic that we can give. Carbon-14 then reacts with oxygen to form carbon dioxide, which goes into the atmosphere. Now, you know that plants take in carbon dioxide. Animals eat the plants, and so we have carbon dioxide both in plants and animals and humans. Anything living has carbon in it. After death, however, carbon-14 decays into nitrogen-14, which eventually returns to the atmosphere. So, you have living creatures taking in carbon as we're here on Earth, and then you have, as we die, carbon being released. And so what is the rate of that decay of the carbon? People say you can tell by the rate of decay. You can tell by how much carbon is left in formerly living creatures, how old that creature was. They say that the half-life of a unit of carbon is around 5,000 years. And so if there are 20 units of carbon in a creature, and then, you know, when you test it, there's only when it was living and then it died. When when you test it, let's say there's 10 units of carbon. Well, they would say you could know that that creature died about 5,000 years ago. Well, what's the problem with radiocarbon dating? Well, there are a lot of different problems with it. By the way, I heard I was watching a cartoon. I love watching cartoons with my kids. I grew up watching Batman and Spider-Man and Green Lantern and all the superheroes on Super Friends, and now my kids have gotten into that. Well, I was watching one of those episodes, Batman and I think it was Aquaman or Green Lantern, and they were talking about how they had gone into the future, and they were wanting their friends back at whatever their headquarters was. They wanted them to find this particular, whatever it was they were wanting them to find. They said, you know what, we can go back in time and somehow use radiocarbon dating and decide this and decide that. And they were using this on the scale of millions of years. Do you realize that radiocarbon dating, a lot of people don't realize this, it doesn't do any good for evolutionary dating methods. I know our time is up. I'm sorry about this. But even evolutionists admit that it's useful. That is radiocarbon dating. This is the foremost atheistic evolutionist in the world. He said that radiocarbon dating is useful for dating organic material on an archaeological historical timescale where we are dealing in hundreds or a few thousand years, but is no good for evolutionary timescale where we are dealing in millions of years. Here's an evolutionist. He said you can't use radiocarbon dating to try to prove that the earth is old. Well, what do people use? Well, let me skip. And furthermore, there have been a lot of problems in radiocarbon dating. Well, people use radiometric dating, which is how they date a lot of the rocks. They say, well, you have a particular kind of element in a rock, and this element, we know over a period of time, breaks down into another element. And they say that the half-life of this element is something like 4.5 billion years. And so you can know, to use the example of uranium and lead, you can know how much time has gone by testing how much uranium is in a sample and how much lead is in that same sample, because uranium breaks down into lead over such a long period of time. Well, there are all sorts of assumptions that are built in. In fact, here's what I want you to remember as I close, is that every dating method that evolutionists use to claim how old certain rocks are all based on unproven and unprovable assumptions. They don't know that the rate of decay, if the rate of decay of one element into another has always been the same. Number two, they don't know if these elements have been affected by outside sources. And number three, they do not know how much of the daughter element was there to begin with. Meaning, I know I'm hurrying through this. Meaning that if they say, well, you know, uranium 238 breaks down into lead over such a long period of time, and there's this much uranium in this rock, and there's this much lead in this rock. Well, wait just a second. Are you making the assumption then that there wasn't any lead in that rock to begin with? Well, yeah. Well, how can you assume that? They don't know that. They make these assumptions, and all evolutionary dating methods are based on these assumptions. If you want to know more about this, please log on to our website, www.apologeticspress.org. Maybe check out some of our books if you would like. And also, I have a sign-up sheet up here. If you are interested in receiving a weekly email update from Apologetics Press every Monday, just to notify you of new articles on our website, feel free to do that. And I don't think we ever email anyone more than just one time a week, usually on Monday mornings. Thank you for your kind attention. Look forward to the worship hour.